Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello.
Sims and Lefko, hey, how you doing? How you feeling? How you living? How you moving?
What up?
It is good to be back. Hall of Fame was this weekend.
Yeah.
We had our first preseason game, and a lot of them are kicking off this Thursday, which that to me is when I begin to realize just how hard the job can be.
Yeah.
To keep up with
and watch all the games.
So you're going to try and watch a good amount of them.
I'm going to try, yes. I mean, first preseason game, I'm not necessarily worried about evaluating the Aaron Rodgers of the world, going, let me see if Aaron can still throw
the slam. You're a little bit like me. I make a list of all the rookies, and I go, who are the, and the maybe the new free agents.
Exactly right.
And I go, let me just watch a few, and then once they get off the field, okay, now I can move. I'm not going to check out the third stringers. Like, I'm just...
No, I hear you.
I'll wait for those guys to get fleshed out a little bit more.
Right, or some of those third stringers end up putting up great statistics, or they pop to me on film. Then I'll look at them. Let me look at them a little harder here.
Like a Kareem Hunt last year.
Right, exactly right. Those kind of guys always pop up. But, yeah, that's the way I approached the Hall of Fame, watching that film game the other day. I just wanted to see a few rookies, really. I mean, we know who I wanted to see. I wanted to see Lamar Jackson.
Let's start right there.
Yeah.
But first, I think RG3 kind of, and we're going to get to the Hall of Famers. Let me just give a rundown. This new Odell contract thing with the Giants, we're definitely getting to.
Yes, we are.
The trade of Corey Coleman, Earl Thomas, Calvin Benjamin with some comments. And then I got some whoa big training camps, a Blake Bortles, a Kyle Shanahan, some fans. And then a rare occurrence on the pod.
Hmm.
Josh Fendrick, during our model photo shoot, did an interview with Drew Brees, and we're just going to let...
We just let him go.
We just let him do it.
We're calling us stupid, but we let him go.
So Josh Fendrick finally earning his keep around here.
Drew.
Do you put your workouts in a spreadsheet?
When you threw for 5,000 yards, did you categorize each completion from... biggest to smallest?
Yeah, did you go from A to Z or Z to A? So we have a rare Josh Fendrick interview with Drew Brees.
Good evening.
Good evening, Drew. So all that's coming, that's going to be coming up at the end of the show. But Hall of Fame game. RG3 looked pretty impressive.
I think he was the star of the show for me. That was the
quick
guy.
Quick decisions, out of his hand,
right.
Accurate passes.
Right. And, you know, I'm into little things, too. Like, you know, watching the ball come out of his hands. Did it pop out of his hands? Like, ooh, it looked pretty good.
Bit.
Then they show replays, right? And you go, let me see how it's spinning. Let me see the spiral.
Yes.
His spirals are perfect. I mean, his interception certainly wasn't his fault. That was Rashad Perriman.
It's well documented. We're not the biggest fans of RG3.
No, I am not an RG3 fan. But I'm not going to sit here and hate on anything I see on the football field. And what I saw on the football field was a good start, and a guy that's putting himself in position not only to continue his career but really solidify himself as a backup if he can continue along this journey.
Oh, so that's what Marty Mordingweg studied this offseason, the entire Eagles playbook. Like, it just it felt like that offense that he was trying to run.
Yeah
Lamar.
Yeah.
Lamar's a rookie. He's very much a rookie.
Right.
He wanted to run.
Yes.
Did you think he was as fast as you thought he would be? Because to me, was he going full speed?
This is what everybody has said. He didn't run away from anybody. He didn't run away. I got scared. I know, everybody did.
Did you get scared too?
Well, no, I get it. I knew those were like going to be some of the focal points. First of all, not even Michael Vick is always just going to run away from people. Like,
sure did feel like it.
I know it does. But that's where having other great players on the field would help out a Lamar Jackson.
Break that down.
Like, okay, so the first bootleg of the game.
Yes,
who was playing running back on that play? Do you remember?
I don't.
Yeah, neither does the defense. They were like, damn, Lamar's in. Let's just watch him. So, right? That's what they did. And he faked to the right, and the middle linebacker basically just said, I don't think he's going to give it to him. They're going to give it to Lamar, boot out. And he ran out there with him.
That's
he didn't even
funny.
Go with the fake.
I
so
didn't think about that.
When you don't have any greatness on the field to
truly
worry about.
All the eyes are on you.
Right. Like, there was no running. There's no Marshall Yanda and Ronnie Stanley where they were going, damn, they're bludgeoning us downhill run game five plays in a row. I got to worry about this. Oh, wait, Lamar's on the edge, and now he's got two steps on me, and now he looks really fast because I can't catch him.
Random question.
Yes.
Is there any benefit for the Ravens to let Lamar keep the bootleg every single time this preseason because they know all the attention is going to be on him, and then when they use him in the game, he's strictly a distraction option?
Yes, I do.
I mean,
they're going to play that together, certainly, because they're going to stress the backside of the defense or an over-aggressive weak-side safety or linebacker, certainly. You're all over that.
I thought he threw the ball well. I thought
well.
It came out of him quick.
Yes, definitely.
I thought the touchdown, you know, was a simple read.
Yeah.
But I thought he threw it pretty well.
He did. I think the thing I looked at it is just comfort throwing the ball. He changed his arm angle a few times, right, where he went
sidearm,
right?
Yep.
Did a little bit of all. He showed the ability to get the ball out of his hand quickly, moved in the pocket once or twice and made some throws to his right, like a crow route on the run that was money. And those are the things where he's going to be great because anytime he escapes the pocket – passing lanes are going to become wide open because linebackers are going to just be more worried about him running than anything.
Yes.
And they're going to abandon their coverage responsibility, and all of a sudden there's going to be a gaping hole. But yeah, for the most part, I would say this too, just a synopsis of all of it. Was it perfect? No. It was better than the stats would claim it would be, right? He was, 4 for 10. Well, let me just, I'll say this from this standpoint. The Bears defense played some coverages that I promise you he's never seen a whole lot in his life. And are pretty advanced for a Hall of Fame preseason game number one.
Was it really?
Yeah,
what did you see
they
out
were
there?
Kind of playing some like three match and doing some very creative zone coverages where they were passing people
and
off.
Usually it's just like a base defense.
Usually you get cover two or it's man-to-man and then it's just that's it. So there was a few times where he dropped back to pass and I know everybody wanted like people to be open and stuff. There was nobody open. Like Baltimore called some pretty, you know, basic offensive schematical pass plays and the Bears defense was all over it.
Vic Fangio.
Right. So they had
he
had a scramble or he had a throw or he ended up taking a sack.
Yeah.
Either way, there were some left tackle issues in there when he was in. But for the most part, yeah, I think you said it. There was things I liked. There was one thing that scared me, and that was his second pass. It was the first third down he had. When he scrambled to the left, no one open. Man, he almost hurt his left knee in his first run.
That guy that came out of nowhere.
Yes.
And he
it was a linebacker
or something like that.
Yeah, something like that, right?
All I know is he came and he came right at the side of Lamar and I audibly yelled in my apartment.
Yeah. Well,
I was like, he's going to be out for the game
because
for the year.
Because it was that close. And I want to get to it. I want to just show you it real quick so you can vouch for it.
No, I watched it
you
live.
Did. Okay. Yes. But I know it was very close.
I went,
he
like,
was very close to losing his left knee. For the whole year. Leg went straight, it buckled, and luckily it slid and didn't get caught, and that saved him.
Like Leonard Fournette.
Exactly.
Damn. It's
the same thing. So.
Hayden Hurst, anybody jump out to you?
Hayden Hurst, you know, it looks good.
Yeah, he looks a little smaller than I thought he was going to be. But.
Yeah, he's condensed and muscular. The thing I looked, he ran one route, like a deep cross with Lamar in the game at one point, ran a horrible route. Like, so there's another instance of like, there's a young guy learning. People are going to look at Lamar and go, oh, he missed that guy. And I want to go, no, it was a horrible route. There was nobody open. And Lamar had to kind of put it only in one spot where Hayden Hurst kind of maybe made a big catch. So all that, the interception. Yeah. Again, those aren't interceptions that I get concerned with. And I go, ooh, he really made a bad read or missed
it. Manziel's interceptions were scared to you.
Definitely. I mean, Lamar's.
You want to talk about that real
quick? Yeah, I will. I'll get to it in a second. But Lamar's was, oh, if you have man to man, you throw to this guy on the backside of the play. He just was a little late doing it and also had a bad route by a receiver as well.
It was a very lazy route.
It
was a comeback with no coming back.
No, exactly.
He just kind of stopped.
He was like a little stop route, and Lamar was a little late in throwing it out there. He was a little lazy with his footwork. So both both of those combined.
I'm just self-scouting. I don't want to be too much of a Lamar Jackson apologist early on. But I also think people are judging preseason Hall of Fame week one a little hard. But
And you got to, you know, you realize you're not seeing any of these guys at their top peak right now. Like, how many guys did you see in the open field, like, stumble over their own feet and, like, fall? Yeah. Because they all have camp legs right now. Their legs we've been in camp for 17 straight days, and my legs are jello as hell. And I go out there every day and feel like, man, I used to run 4.4, but I feel like I run 4.9 right now because I'm just exhausted, and you're not quite into that shape yet.
Johnny Manziel, 4 interceptions.
What?
Were they deflections? Were they bad? How was it in your mind?
What, I mean, the one where he scrambles in the pocket and tries to flip it to the guy,
that was his fault.
That was a nice little play escape. The other ones are his fault, fully through.
That first interception, you texted me and were like, this is awful. Like, this is beyond bad.
That was like, because, again, I don't want to criticize him too harshly. He hasn't played football in a while.
And that team stinks.
And they do stink. So we do have to take that into account. Yes, but
he threw a pick that was either going to be intercepted by one linebacker, intercepted by the other linebacker, or his wide receiver was going to die.
Going to get killed by the safety. Exactly right. So that play right there in itself was not only a bad read, it was a bad throw, and it was into close quarters. Like, I don't know what he saw there. And to end it all, really, with Johnny Manziel, the thing that I'm concerned with about the most is just the way the athlete looked. I'm not going to over-evaluate.
That's all I care about with preseason.
Exactly right.
And apparently Canadian
football. Yes, well, it's, you know, I just want to see him and what it looks like. And the twitchiness that we knew him to have back in the day, no, that's not quite there. And the way the ball came out of his hand, and with lack of velocity and lack of spiral, those things concern me. And I'm not going to say, oh, I'm done with it or I've made up my mind. But that was not a impressive start to me to go, ooh, yeah, he might be the guy we saw in another few weeks. When he, like, right now, I question whether he can ever be that guy again. I do. I question it. And like I told you, I've just, between the stories of him practicing at the, what is it, the AAFL? Is that that one?
Yes.
Where was the one where, is that the AAFL? Which one? I get all the damn leagues confused now. I can't remember. Whatever league he went and practiced for. I know from NFL people that it was underwhelming, his practices. And
he's got to be there for 2 years.
And there's rumors that he's a cigarette smoker. That's those two things alone that scare me.
How many players in the NFL do you think smoke cigarettes?
Like, almost none. I mean, like, Jay Cutler was the only guy I knew of in the NFL that smoked cigarettes. The only guy. I mean, I'd never played with anybody that I knew. I mean, and I'm not talking like, listen, did I have guys on the team that were like drunk idiots on a Thursday night that might have smoked a cigarette?
But you're talking about actually buying a pack.
I'm talking about a guy that's buying packs, right? And it's like, this is part of his life.
You didn't know a single one?
Not one.
So for Johnny Manziel to be reportedly doing that, it's kind of an outlier.
I mean, it almost is like, to me, is like you might as well hold up a sign and go, I'm not really that serious about this athletic thing. I mean,
that's
really what you're saying.
It's kind of documented at this point.
Kind of serious.
Hot take, cigarettes are better for your NFL career. That's my new out of left go field. I just got an alert. Giants ready to pay up for Odell, negotiating to make Odell NFL's highest paid wide receiver, possibly before the start of the regular season.
Contradicting.
Yeah, that's from Rappaport, and that's coming out after, what's her
name? Josina Anderson.
Josina Anderson reported that the no deal in place, Odell's agent is no longer in town. Both sides working to consummate a deal. The understanding is that Odell was being offered less than Sammy Watkins, less than $16 million a year.
Randy Watkins. I don't know what that was. That was Coming to America. I just went through my head. What was his name? The pastors?
It's a little crazy to realize. I don't remember. Right. The guys that also got paid less than Sammy Watkins. Evans, Landry, Hopkins, Cooks, Robinson, Diggs, Adams, all are getting paid less per year than Sammy Watkins, which is why he's mentioned a lot.
Yes.
What do you think? Let's do Odell before the Hall of Fame, just because that kind of popped up.
Right.
When you heard that story, the less than $16 million a year, That physically upset me.
Yeah, me too. I was like, oh my gosh. I mean,
I didn't know they were that far apart.
I mean.
We think they need to be in the Antonio Brown 17s.
At least. I'm sorry. I don't know what other way to say. He's better than Antonio Brown, everybody. I'm sorry. And I'm telling you, most people in football think that too. And that's not a disrespect to Antonio Brown. And he's younger. He's faster. He's a little bit bigger. He's every bit as good a route runner. He's had a less creative offense and a lesser quarterback to be to surround him. But either way, yeah, when I first heard that, I was with you. I was like annoyed. I was like, are you kidding me?
Nick, who was sitting here, was like, he's a Giants fan. He was like, oh no. Because throughout this entire Odell contract experience,
yeah,
we haven't really heard numbers. And John Mara has been playing it perfect. Mm-hmm. We're going to handle it. We're going to handle it. We're going to handle it. Odell's played it perfect. I'm showing up. I'm posting things to my Instagram. I'm showing you that I'm working out. And then as this is the really the first time that we've heard a disagreement in numbers.
Yeah.
And it's the phrase, they're valuing him less than Sammy Watkins. It's putting a face to the number.
Right.
It's not, we're offering him $16 million. We're offering him $15 million, which you go, man, I would do a lot of stuff for $15 million.
Right.
But anyone can say he's better than Sammy Watkins.
No doubt. Yeah. I don't know how you couldn't say he's better than everybody. I can understand some people going, no, I think Antonio's better or Julio's better. I can understand that. Other than that, I really can't understand the take on you think he's better than Odell Beckham Jr. Yes, and to hear that, like Josina Anderson, that, I'm sure that's real. She always has the scoop. I can trust you that.
She like, seems to be the player's reporter.
That's what I mean. So I wouldn't be shocked if maybe that was the Giants' like initial offer, and somebody in Odell's camp let that out to Josina to kind of like.
And then, and what's really
and
funny,
then the
is,
Giants saw that, and they were like, "Man, yes, that doesn't look good.
Hey,
that doesn't look good on us.
I'm going to take you guys behind the curtain,
right?
Okay. I started doing this with Schefter earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Look at which reporters report which news,
mm-hmm.
Josina Anderson is a player reporter. So if it's coming from the camp, if Le'Veon Bell needs to say something, I bet you it's coming through Josina
exactly
Anderson.
Right, right.
Rappaport, because he's NFL media, this is owners, this is
GMs.
Franchises, GMs.
He was all over Gettleman to Carolina early.
Gettleman
to the Giants. So,
yes,
he has a connection there with maybe the Gettleman or somebody in the Giants.
Yeah. So don't just look at news as fact. Look at news as a representation from the camp they're reporting from. So in one corner, in the Odell corner, we have Josina Anderson trying to get them to give him more money.
Right.
In the blue corner, we have Rappaport trying to go, we're going to take care of them.
Right.
It's just funny. And I really think it's important to kind of remember these things so that the next time Rappaport comes out with Odell news, it's coming from the organization.
Right.
Like, it's just good to scope your news like that.
I agree. That's how you read between the lines.
It's the reason we're able to go, oh, Fox News, it's coming from one place. CNN, it's coming from another place.
Right.
NFL is just like that.
It is exactly right, like that. And yes, I would imagine that that's kind of went down. That story got out there. Ian Rappaport probably inquired to go, man, is this story true
right.
with whoever he knows of the Giants? The Giants were probably already in the midst of having conversations going, that doesn't look good.
Right.
That's going to piss off people in our locker room. That's going to piss off our fan base
yes.
because they're going to go, what? You're not going to pay him as much as Sammy Watkins.
Remember when you told me that they weren't going to include Sammy Watkins? I'm telling you, man.
I know. You're right.
It's because right. it's more visceral.
Yeah.
I was trying to explain this. Like, I think what agents need to do when they're holding out, it always becomes player versus franchise. It needs to be player versus GM.
Player. Oh, yeah.
It
okay.
needs to
yeah,
be
yeah, right.
Odell versus Gettleman.
Right.
Not Odell versus the Giants.
Yeah.
My grandmom didn't scream and cheer for Gettleman. She screamed and cheered for the Giants.
I know. But the teams are smart, and they make it versus the team.
They do.
Because people are loyal to the emblem on the helmet
yes,
and the uniform.
And I'm saying deduce the helmet.
Yeah.
Or put it to another comp that everyone knows you're going to be better than.
Right.
Do you think he ends up getting more than Sammy Watkins?
I do, yes. I think he's going to get paid more than anybody. I don't think there's any way they can deny this. I really don't. And I think Odell's at a point, too, where he knows his worth. I think some of the comments players have made around the league about Odell Beckham Jr. this year have all solidified the fact of how high he's looked upon. I mean, how many defensive players and other receivers have we heard this year go, he's the man, he's the best, blah, blah, blah. So I do think it's going to happen because I think the Giants think that they're a serious Super Bowl contender in the NFC, and I think they know that if this continues to dance on and continue to be a topic of conversation, that it's going to be a distraction at some point.
I just got a little upset.
What?
Because I want to know if Ian Rappaport was one of the first to report that Odell Beckham substance video.
Oh.
Because I'm thinking about what we were just talking
right.
about, And right. that means that it might have come from the team.
Mm, yeah.
Just kind of thinking out loud.
That's fine. Think out loud.
You know what I mean? Yes. Like, I think that we're in a world of everyone follows their own things and they have their own streams and your news isn't the same as my news. But there's ways of like kind of infiltrating it to get your message apart.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of thinking that. Yeah. Let's talk about the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
Overall, what did you think of the class and their performances?
Oh, it was great.
Okay.
It really was. I enjoyed it. I mean, is it a little long, the whole thing? Definitely. I mean, damn, it's long.
What about, do you think that T.O. got his own time to shine?
No, T.O., I will say that T.O. fucked up. That's what I came away after Saturday going, because I didn't really want to watch the Tennessee Chattanooga thing. I watched it for...
It wasn't anywhere to watch it.
No, and it's not cool. It just wasn't... It had lacked any energy, spectacle, nothing about it. The when I walked away from it all Saturday night, I said, man, the Hall of Fame would have been amazing if T.O. had this speech in between a Dawkins and a Ray Lewis
right.
and called out the Hall of Fame there to their faces about their process would have been a way bigger platform to what he said in Chattanooga, which nobody cares about.
He controlled the afternoon cycle with some tweets and some posted videos.
Right.
But what people don't realize is that was going to get cannibalized by the nighttime.
Right.
And he was forgotten very quickly.
Yes, he was. And I think that he was
trying to prove a point.
Yeah, and I'm second guessing this because I thought he was I thought it was cool that he was doing this. So I'm not like trying to say
his main message was this is for you.
Right.
And then when he talked about the Hall of Fame, he blamed the writers for not upholding the tenets of the
right.
Pro Football.
See, I just wish he would have said that on ESPN during the whole Hall of Fame enshrinement. I think it would have hit home harder.
Did it, or the fact that he controlled the news narrative for 6 weeks and every Hall of Famer was talking about him for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
He kind of owned the whole cycle leading up to it.
He did.
It just really depends what his goal was.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, now...
Because I'll be honest, you know what he was? I think he did the right move. Because if he had to follow Brian Dawkins, it would have been just like what happened to Randy Moss. Am I the only one that think that Randy Moss's speech seemed really lackluster after Brian Dawkins?
Well, Brian Dawkins had the best speech of the night. I mean,
all off the top of the head.
Well, I mean, Brian Dawkins is just an impressive human being, and it was so natural and emotion-based, and it was just easy for him. It wasn't too scripted. Yes, that's hard to follow up that. I mean, he's amazing. He's an amazing talker. He's got a great life story. And Moss is that's tough to live up to. Moss isn't that kind of guy to be like that totally.
For me, it was, I'll just be honest, I sat there and I was celebrating with Brian Dawkins. Yeah. I had a shot poured for the end of his speech.
Right.
If I were to tell you that I'd cried, that's like an understatement.
I almost cried like 9 times.
And the times when you almost, I did.
I mean, every time they showed the family's mom or the kids, like I'm the worst, man. So
really,
yes,
you're just a sap.
I mean, my little daughter, she just watches me and she's just like, "Are you crying? Are you crying?" She like loves
dad
loves
crying.
It. But
I thought this is me, and look, everyone's life is unique and everyone's life is different. Brian Dawkins getting up there and talking about how he almost committed suicide and talking about being the lowest of the low and every great thing he had to endure pain to get there.
Yep.
Every speech is in essence the same. I went through hard times. I didn't get here by myself. These people helped me. I did it. A little bit of shot to the haters, and now I'm in. Like, every story's kind of the same. But Dawkins, I felt like, hit all of the peaks so much harder that to hear Randy Moss come afterwards and be like, I went through some stuff, I was like, Brian Dawkins almost killed himself.
Yeah.
So it was weird. Like, I thought Randy Moss's afterwards, like, obviously I love Randy. I thought what Randy did with his tie, honoring so many of the victims that fell, that were innocent at the hands of police officers that claimed their lives.
Social injustice, right.
I thought that was a great way to talk about it.
Yeah, that was amazing. 4:30, meet me at the town center.
That was awesome.
That was amazing.
And then Bill Belichick.
Of course it was.
Showing up in khakis. And thong sandals.
Yeah, well, that's what he wears every day to the office this time of the year.
But you're going to be on stage at the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Can I get like a Johnson and Murphy?
Negative. He doesn't give a damn. Him and Rob flew the private plane there, and they showed up and did that. paid homage to the Randy Moss, and that was it.
So our man Nana hit me up on the Instagram DMs, right, and he said, when Belichick gets inducted, I'm going to be so pissed if they don't make him a gold hoodie. And then halfway through the speech, he cuts the sleeves off with Brady going wild and throwing avocado ice cream.
I mean, it's the hoodie thing. I mean, hoodies with snow sleeves is in style now. And that's because of Bill Belichick. Isn't that crazy?
I do see a lot of athletes that kind of, they like the hood, but they, do you think?
I have a hoodie with no sleeves. Made of House of Highlights. Right here, Bleacher Report. I stole it. They had a box of hoodies. I said, damn, they're cool. I'm taking one. I stole it out of the box.
You took a House of Highlights?
Yeah, Omar. House of Highlights hoodie.
Omar, I'm sorry.
Omar, deal with it.
Yeah,
eat that crap.
Eat that, Omar. But you young punk.
But yeah, I mean, what would I want to say here? I wanted to go, just last thing, like with the Hall of Fame thing. I mean, T.O. has every right to be pissed off.
Yes.
I mean,
he was a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Almost 100 more receptions than Randy Moss and 700 yards more receiving and only 3 less touchdowns. And he, for some reason, was on the 3rd ballot and Randy Moss was on the 1st one.
Yeah.
And now the NFL's talking about, you might have to sign a contract to say you're definitely going to be there. You know, come on.
That's what they talked about, the Rate Nitschke lunch.
First of all, just vote on people to get in the damn Hall of Fame. Stop with these all side storylines. And this has happened one time.
Well, here's what I think it is.
So let's relax.
I heard Chris Carter talking about this on First Things First.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how it's the last big speech that you're ever going to give.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last time where you're going to be really showered with this much adoration. If I told you that, I think about it like this. All these old guys, when their career is over, right? This is the one date on their calendar that they look at their family and they go, don't tell me what we're doing in August that first weekend. You know where I'll be, because it's the same thing every year.
Yeah.
They get around their guys. They're a legend again. And it's this amazing feeling. And it's probably a little bit when a 21-year-old comes to me and they go, man, I love going out to the clubs. And I look at them and go, nothing good happens at a club. I know it's fun. You're just wasting your money. You're not going to find the woman of your dreams there. And they're looking at me going, man, don't tell me how to live my life.
You loser.
Right.
You square.
These old Hall of Famers know that in the end, those moments, that weekend, is really the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
And T.O. doing this, they're going, in 20 years, 30 years, you're going to realize that you wanted to spare it with us. Because in the end, we're the only ones that know what this is like.
Yeah, sure.
So I think they're coming at it from this pure, purity. And they're in. And once they're in, you kind of forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
And T.O. just goes, I've spent my entire career being shit on.
Yeah.
And I'm not ready to give it up yet.
By some of you, too. I mean, some of those people in the hall.
That's
and
another
some of the
great
voters.
Point.
So that's the other problem. I mean, people are forgetting that some of these, Chris Carters and them, have personally attacked him over the years.
He also played in the first era where there was a lot of not just local news reporters,
right,
but ESPN debate shows,
yeah,
and all
right,
that. Those didn't exist for Jordan.
No.
You know,
yes.
LeBron's experience compared to Jordan's experience is different. T.O.'s experience,
compared
imagine if Chris
Rice.
Carter got kicked off for doing coke.
Exactly.
In this generation.
Right,
yes.
Right. Yeah, I know. You're right. It'd be a totally different story. It'd be a totally different life. It'd be a totally set of pure pressure that you have to deal with. Because of the public scrutiny that's on you. Yeah, I know.
Back then, going to Minnesota was don't worry, no one's going to bother you in Minnesota. Now it's no, man, it's all national.
Doesn't matter where you go.
Yes.
All right, last thing that bothers me about the Hall of Fame.
Dude, one quick thing.
Yeah.
I thought the only time I got embarrassed was when the Eagles fans booed
Belichick. Yeah.
And Robert Kraft looked at him and he's like, are you kidding me? But then I saw Emmett Smith and Michael Irvin up there, and apparently they booed Emmett. And there was one clip where Emmett was wouldn't stop talking to Irvin. And after our experience,
I was talking.
Dude, Emmett is definitely pissed as shit about Eagles fans. Emmett Smith has a true hatred for Eagles fans,
right,
and it's really unsettling.
I'm glad the Eagles fans booed everybody. That's what they do. Just stay with what they do. Deal with it.
You like that?
I'm
going to take that because I was feeling self-conscious.
That's all right. That's what you guys do. And it's out of love for the Eagles and hate of everybody else.
I just feel like Eagles fans are always the cousin at the wedding that has too much. And then during a speech stands up and it's like, that's not what you said last night, Tom.
I hear you. But
so I get a little embarrassed, but they're also amazing.
They're also the only one that's allowed. That's real in the building too. I would say
the Eagles fans were so real that Brian Dawkins forgot to thank the Denver Broncos. Like, he did. He had to apologize later. Yeah. But he said, he was like, now let's talk about them Eagles fans. And it was like, and I stood up at my house.
Yeah, I know.
All right, so what was the other thing about the Hall of Fame that you wanted to get off your chest that you didn't like?
Oh, it's not actually about the Hall of Fame.
Ray Lewis didn't look like his bust?
What? No, I mean, that was horrible. That was the worst bust I ever saw. Like, we should right have David Baker Dungy on. His family's got to call and be like, that's not even, that's horrible. Randy Moss had the best bust of the night.
Yeah,
cornrows. I thought Dawkins was okay.
The weird thing is I thought about this. You've never, not only have you not seen Dawkins' hair, because he always wore a cap,
right,
but also, like, I felt like his bust needed a visor. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's his identity.
I know.
You know, a black visor.
Yeah. He was scary looking.
All right, so I'm cutting you off.
No, it's not. You're good. But I get annoyed with the social media stuff with Ray Lewis. I'm so sick of people calling him a murderer and everything. Mm. I can't take it. I really can't. And I think it's so fucking wrong that it bothers me.
So this is Sims. Sims will look at a tweet and then he'll go down and look at some of the comments.
I
know you're doing this because every time someone said, Ray Lewis says that he kisses his kids in the mouth, someone be like, just like he killed people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I just, it's so ridiculous. And let me just tell you, this is the story I know from the homies, from everybody. This is the story that was always told in the locker room. Ray Lewis didn't kill anybody, okay? Everybody back off that stupid thing. Oh, yeah, the Atlanta Police Department didn't want to accuse a famous black football player of murder, and they just let him go somehow. The jury just let him go. Okay, yeah, right. Okay, the story is this. Somebody got killed in the strip club that night. Most people know who the guy was, right? From everything I've known from urban legends or whatever, from the people in the locker room, this guy stabbed somebody outside the Atlanta strip club that night. And from everything I know is Ray Lewis witnessed it along with other people. And Ray Lewis just basically didn't rat the guy out. And they basically said, oh, we know you were there and you know who it was.
Right.
You need to tell us. And he said, no. And they basically then said, all right, well, then we're going to charge you.
Obstruction of justice.
Right. And we're going to charge you and go through with this. But from everything I know, and maybe I'm wrong. Again, I don't know. But this is a story.
This is what you're hearing in the NFL.
I always heard this. I've known this from back in the day, is that this guy that did the stabbing was a stone cold gangster from South Florida, and he told Ray Lewis, if you rat me out, I'm going to kill your family and everything. That's always been the story.
Mm.
That everything. So then Ray just basically had to bite the bullet, didn't rat the guy out, went through the whole jury, but that's always been the story through NFL locker rooms from the second I got in the NFL.
How often is it talked about NFL locker
rooms?
Well,
I mean, it was
like every time you play the Ravens with somebody, like, hope he doesn't kill you, Sims.
It's always, yeah, well, I'll play that murderous linebacker today. Or,
and
like,
then what, some teammates would go, yeah, that's not
what I
heard.
Of the stories would come out, right? You'd start going, that's not what happened, blah, 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 blah. Somebody would know somebody from South Florida or somebody that played with Ray before or whatever it was.
So every time you play the Ravens, it became like a discussion almost.
Yeah, you'd always hear that's little sly comments about that. Definitely. Always. Yes. And that bothers me. And Ray is not a murderer in any capacity. He'd kick your ass on the field, but he's a pretty damn good guy off of it.
Yeah. Do you kiss your son on the mouth?
You know, I do a little from time to time.
Do you ever kiss your dad on the mouth?
No, never. Never have in my life. I mean, my dad first time he told me he loved me, I was like 32.
I'm more of like a handshake, hug type of love.
Yeah. But
this Tom Brady, Ray Lewis, like there's like this generation of mouth-kissing dads that I'm not.
Yeah, no, it's weird.
Do I have to do that?
No, you don't. I like.
Do you want to do it sometimes?
It's not even like it just happens at times where like I'm kissing his cheeks and then I might like get the edge of his lip or whatever or something like that. But you know, he's 7.
Yeah.
And he's always going to be 7 to me. I think that's what happens is he's going to be 27. And I'm still going to see this 7-year-old. And I'm going to I'm going to kiss you on the cheeks and do all this shit that I used to do with you. It doesn't change. And I'm sure I thought that my kids laughed at that part.
Because the kid's like,
They were, you know, macho teenagers or college kids. Like, no, he doesn't do that because, you know, they're getting roasted at school today.
You know, you go and kiss your dad.
Kiss your dad on the lips again.
That
was funny.
All right, so a bunch of news. The Patriots just cut Malcolm Mitchell.
Wow. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, they were trying to trade him. That makes sense.
And
he's
they
got
just
a little
signed
knee
Eric
issues,
Decker.
So they're scared of him. Right.
Browns trade Corey Coleman to the Bills for a 7th round pick.
Yeah.
In essence, a throwaway.
Yeah.
for a former first-round pick. And all of a sudden, Josh Gordon's not at camp. Some people are saying it's because he doesn't want to be on Hard Knocks. Corey Coleman's now gone. And Jarvis Landry's the only one left of the trio that he said is maybe the, or he says the best wide receiving core in the NFL. And
I want an apology for him. I want those crying emojis he sent to that Instagram.
So when you said that Cleveland wasn't a top five receiving trio,
yeah,
and then he wrote crying emojis, you'd like Jarvis Landry to issue an apology.
I want the yellow circle
thinking face.
Thinking face that says, I'm sorry, Chris Sims, you're pretty good.
The thinking face does not mean that. Thinking face is when somebody like tweets or texts something that's questionable.
Right.
You're kind of like,
Yeah, you're right.
You would need like the prayer hands,
okay,
maybe. Or like a face down.
Or the guy that does this. Like, hands you're up. Right, I'm sorry.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
So I look at the receiving core. It's Jarvis Landry. Josh Gordon, I think, is going to play.
Yeah,
I don't know.
They're sticking to that.
And then it's Rashard Higgins, Jeff Janis, and a lot of people are talking very highly about Antonio Callaway. Mm-hmm. Is that a kid from Florida?
Yeah. He's super talented. I mean, he would have been probably one of the top 40 players picked in the draft this year if he didn't have the off-the-field issues. And that was, like, one of the first things I thought of, that they must be liking what they see out of him.
Okay.
That he can do that. Now, I still look at it and go, wow, that's an unproven roster.
Yes.
At wide receiver. I know they like the Higgins kid. Jarvis Landry certainly can do everything. And maybe Jeff Janis is performing
just
at a higher level than
we thought. Just all those years in Green Bay, I'm just not going to...
I know.
I feel like Jeff Janis... is just like in Green Bay, one of those guys that's a whoa big offseason guy,
yep,
where he has the physical tools, he can run, he can jump, and then something happens in the game where he drops a lot of balls. That's what, right, I've always read about him in Green Bay.
Right.
And we'll see if this is different. But
I know.
So you think it might be an Antonio Callaway type of thing?
I would think that he'd be the guy there. And yeah, I think that it showed me that they probably have confidence that Josh Gordon will be back at some point.
Because to lose Ricardo Lewis, too,
I know,
it's turned into a very shallow position.
Yes. Now, they do have some decent tight end play, and they do have some running backs that can catch the ball out of the backfield, too, that can make
that's
up for that.
That's what we're forgetting.
We always forget
okay,
that.
Okay, so I forgot to bring this up last episode.
Right.
Duke Johnson has been going to Hugh Jackson and saying, play me at wide receiver.
Right.
Like, he's trying to be a position change.
Yeah.
I was going out of Lefko Field and going, this is about running backs not getting a lot of money. He's a playmaker, blah, blah, blah. He genuinely wants to be a wide receiver. He actually wants to play defense, but he will take wide receiver, was the article that I read about him.
I didn't know that about the defensive side. But yeah,
I guess we do count Duke Johnson as a wide receiver.
I think
it's Landry, Gordon, Duke Johnson.
That's what I mean. That's like when people go to like New England, they always talk about New England. Oh, they're receivers or whatever. I go, well, they got some good receivers and they got two good tight ends. And
yes,
don't forget James White
caught like 11
right,
14
and they
balls
got Rex Burkhead, who's literally played a game in the NFL for the Bengals where he
as
played wide receiver the whole game.
Right.
So we always forget that. Me included. I always go, oh, they're wide receiver court. And I go, oh, it did. They have those two other pass catchers that they can line up as a slot receiver 30 times a game and they really don't miss a beat.
Look at the Colts. Oh, their wide receivers aren't that good. Okay, but they just signed Ebron, so it's Ebron and Jack Doyle.
Right.
They're going to have two tight ends in the field all the time.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's positionless offensive football, playmaker type of stuff.
And this is what I always hate about training camp, too, because there's probably another guy or two on the wide receiving core in Cleveland who's doing really well that's gave them the confidence to do this. And we don't know about it. So that just is what it is.
Damian Ratley.
Corey Coleman, though, that's cool for him. I do think he has potential. I mean, I always thought he did. He just hasn't been able to stay healthy. He can really go. Always thought that coming out of Baylor. And I think he's in a good spot. I mean, you talk about another team that's an underwhelming receiving core.
Oh, the Bills.
I mean, yeah, okay, they got Jeremy Curley. Okay, all right, yep. I mean, he's getting up there in age. You know, you got guys like Rod Streeter, Andre Holmes, kind of like career journeymen who have never done anything.
Yeah.
Zay Jones, the second round pick last year, who was a little bit underwhelming. And then you got Kelvin Benjamin, who's been hurt a lot through his career and has always had a bad knee. So what are you going to depend on him? So
the other thing I think about is this.
Yeah.
What can Josh Allen do?
Throw the ball
really far.
No doubt about
it. Who was the receiver that was going to outrun people
there's
on
nobody.
That roster?
You're exactly right. And even to further that point, because you're exactly right, there's nobody that stresses the defense that way. Also, I'd go, who's really like the legit jitterbug Julian? This is the New England offense they're running. Brian Daboll is the OC there.
No, it's a lot of bigger leaper
that's
guys.
That's what I mean. So who's going to be that guy to do those little jerk option routes? And that's where Corey Coleman, I think, will come into
all
play.
All the reports I'm seeing about Corey Coleman are maybe he's just a slot, which is like an insult. But in today's NFL, I mean, being a slot receiver
is awesome.
Not only is it a great to have, it's such a better value for an NFL team because when you have a slot guy, you don't have to pay him as much.
No, exactly.
Because
right.
we haven't come to the grips yet that maybe that's more important. The percentage of passes completed inside is so much greater than the passes on the outside, but yet we're still trying to stretch the field.
Yeah.
Where maybe if offensive coordinators ran more dynamic play calls with motions and cleared out space and had levels concepts, time, but no, we're still we got to spread them out further. You don't have to spread them out further.
Not at all.
I mean, look at the Patriots pop passes.
Look at Atlanta 2 years ago with Kyle Shanahan. What'd they do? They lined up an I formation. Julio Jones got really close, and they said, we're going to run it this way, and if that backside guy gets too greedy, we're going to throw a slant right behind you. It's like a four-foot throw.
If anything, tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Spreading out, if anything, helps the defense more.
I mean, in a lot
because
of ways,
because when you're trying to defend a bunch, and then they all go to different areas.
Exactly right.
I think that's harder than going, coming across.
No doubt about it. There's less you can do when you're spread out in some of those stationary positions. There's less crosses, picks, things like that that you just can't do. With like you're saying, with bunches and stacks and things like that, you can have different releases that confuse people. You can stress people's rules out different ways. I would think that's a big part of what they're missing in that offense there.
I will give credit to Bean, who I believe is the GM up there,
Brandon,
in Buffalo.
Yeah.
They, these first 2 years, have spent zero time waiting with what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
When they think they need to make a move, they make a move.
They do.
They moved up for the quarterback. They got rid of all their receivers last year. Remember, they got rid of all their cornerbacks, and they drafted guys, Tre'Davious White, that have panned out, that look really good.
Yep.
And they're just not afraid to pull the trigger.
No, they have a vision of what
especially
they want.
Especially after Doug Whaley, where all he did, I feel like he had a gun in a case and said, one day I'll pull that trigger.
Yeah.
But until then, let's trot out EJ Manuel one more time. You know what I mean? Like, I'm happy they have a direction.
Yes, they
I don't think they're going to be that good this year.
No, I think like, they're one of the teams I look at. They're going to not go back to the playoffs. Like them.
The fact that no one's talking about their offensive line and the fact they've lost Cordy Glenn at left tackle and Eric Wood at center and Incognito.
And LeSean McCoy has his issues.
Like,
and
I'm just talking about the offensive line.
Yeah, right.
Fuck all these free agent wide receivers. If your offensive line loses 3 out of 5 and 2 of the 3 were like Pro Bowlers, you're probably going to take a step back.
Yes.
Like I look at the Panthers. Mm-hmm. They lose Norwell. Then they just lost one of their tackles.
Darrell Williams.
They're going to take a step back this year.
Exactly right. That's right. Buffalo, Carolina, and I think the Kansas City Chiefs. If you made me pick three teams.
Did they lose offensive linemen?
No, I'm just saying those are three teams I don't think will be back in the playoffs. Like I think the Kansas City Chiefs are going to be more exciting to watch.
Yeah, you're going to need Patrick Mahomes to play out of his mind.
He's going to have to play out of his mind. I still think there's defensive issues
people
there.
People are forgetting all the defensive guys that are gone from Kansas City.
Eric Berry's coming back from an Achilles.
Right.
Marcus Peters is gone. Right. D Ford has never been anything to this point.
Nope.
Justin Houston's been very average the last few years. I mean, nothing special. Yeah, so who's that? Derek Johnson's gone, right? Ron Parker's gone. So you start to look at it and you go, damn, who's that defense? That defense wasn't that good to begin with.
No.
So now we got to mix and match some people we don't even really know or not household names to this point. So, yeah, I look at that along with the fact that the AFC West is better in general, and you're starting a rookie quarterback to where, Kansas City, I think, is going to be a team that maybe just misses out.
Yeah, I like that. Speaking of, we were talking before just about, let's do Kelvin Benjamin.
While we're on the subject.
His comments about Cam Newton. I mean, I feel like I would have been even more successful if, I don't know, man, looking back on it, I should have just been drafted by somebody else, which is a crazy thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
You don't control that. Plus, you were a reach, if anything. Like, they made you a first-round pick.
Yep.
I should have never went to Carolina. Truly, I think they were bad for me. If you would have put me with any other quarterback, let's be real. You know what I'm saying? Any other accurate quarterback like Rodgers or Eli or Big Ben, anybody, quarterbacks with knowledge that know how to place a ball and give you a better chance to catch the ball, it just felt like I wasn't in that position. Two things. One, it shows you that the NFL still doesn't understand that Eli Manning hasn't been good for 3 years.
Yeah.
So that's funny.
Right.
Two, the team went 15-1 and went to the Super Bowl while you were out for a year.
Without him. That's where he's like, that's where I just look at the argument and go like, what? How can you even make this argument? They were better. And the guy won. The guy you're talking about won the MVP when you didn't play.
Yes.
And when you did play, they struggled. And I'm not. It's not. There's really no correlation.
You know what they? You know what the Panthers always did with Kelvin Benjamin in those sets?
What?
They put him out wide.
Yeah. And there's no doubt. You That's what they were. So for one, I want to go. You know, listen. I know Cam Newton's like numbers and everything in the world aren't always perfect. I understand that. But I would also say, man, Cam Newton's. The way he plays fits Kelvin Benjamin. I mean, Kelvin Benjamin, somebody show me yards after catch. Show me a highlight. He only had one highlight in college where this is my complaint about
right.
him. He's a back shoulder jump ball type of thrower that you split out wide because he can't run some of the, you know, change of direction, shorter type routes because he's so big. Of course, those guys always have trouble with him, let alone he has a faulty knee that makes him less able to cut hard on those shorter change of direction routes. So there's obviously some type of issue that he had with Cam Newton. I don't know what happened or where that went, but there has to be something there. It's the only thing I can look at. Cam Newton's stats are never going to be great in that offense. It's just not the way they are. I mean, it's just not the way they played football.
Yeah, I think if anything, Kelvin Benjamin, the problem that he has in this league right now is you need to stack him out wide because since there's no threat of going deep, he's a liability for a running game.
Yeah.
Because you can cheat on him all the time and put an extra man in the box. I think that he actually can kind of stagnate an offense sometimes because there is no other gear.
No.
He is the opposite of versatile.
Yes.
He is one note. Go and throw back shoulder or throw it high.
Pretty much.
And I think that Carolina offense last year after the trade kind of opened up a little bit. Christian McCaffrey had some more running lanes. Mm-hmm. Their problem was they just didn't have any other wide receivers to play those positions. But DJ Moore looks like he could be that guy.
Yes.
All the clips I'm seeing looks like he could be special.
He can be a superstar. I mean,
I just worry because you like Corey Coleman too.
Yeah, well, hey, I'm going to miss on some. That's the way they go. And we'll see. I still hold hope for Corey Coleman because I do see the explosion still there.
And if that's there.
Yes. But man, my man DJ Moore.
Dude, he's flashing.
Yeah.
Every day I get a clip.
He was the closest thing I saw to like a Percy Harvin coming out in a while. Oof. To that guy where he can take a speed sweep and turn it up and go 70, or he can run by in for a 70-yard bomb or catch a slant route and make people miss and run for a 70-yard touchdown.
Kyle Shanahan,
our
favorite coach in the NFL, had a pretty cool quote. We were talking earlier about bunch formations. You were talking about Kyle's offense. And he says that, I really want my players to overcome coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the quote that he said. So let me just make sure I got some audio on my computer.
Trying to tell a player, don't be a robot. It's a nice way of trying to tell a player, don't be a robot. You know, coach, that's what you told me to do. Well, yeah, I drew it on paper versus cover three, and you got cover two. Like, it's not the exact same. You got to do this. Sometimes you got to overcome coaching. I apologize for not covering it. Calling it versus the right coverage, but when you don't, now you got to overcome my mistake or that I'm not as good as you. So please help us out. It's just a nicer way to me of saying, hey, don't be a robot.
And he goes on to say, if you're facing zone, there's one thing. Like he had this great line where he goes on the whiteboard, it's 5 yards straight line and then a 45-degree angle. He goes, but that's not how it works.
No,
but the thing,
you get jammed to the line of scrimmage, and all of a sudden you go, damn, I'm a step slow. I got to cut it off at 4 yards and then get there.
Exactly.
Those are things like that.
But what I loved about it was, I've never heard a coach say, "I apologize." One, and number two, make up for my mistake. I've never heard a coach say that they've made a mistake before.
Yeah.
That's the difference. And the other thing I thought about was, he's such a former wide receiver. You know, like, yeah. And that yeah. I think, look, that was my out of left go field about McVay, Kyle,
yeah.
and Josh McDaniels, right. is they were all former wide receivers.
Right.
And they all have the best wide receiver concepts yeah. for offensive coordinators.
Yeah.
But have you talked to him about overcoming coaching before? Well, I've just never heard a coach say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I definitely have. It's something that's talked about a lot. And I'm going to get into something a little New England-y, too, there
okay.
about that. But, like, yeah, first of all, that jumped off to me, too. Kyle expects to call the play against the defense he thinks you're going to play. I mean, that's how highly he thinks of himself and his study. And he demands that of himself to go, no, I think they're going to run this coverage. That's why I called this play. And but if I didn't,
he literally puts out formations to draw a certain type of coverage because he knows the tendencies of the
exactly
defense.
Right. If he's in and he goes, oh, I motioned the guy over here, then they go to this coverage, and he's all over. That's why he is great at what
he's
he
does. Playing chess.
It is. He's playing chess. Yes, you have to be able to adjust on the fly. And I think the other point where I was going to go with there is just
patriot-y.
Yeah, the patriot, like New England. This has always jumped out to me about Belichick and even my time with McDaniels. They didn't want the coaches to overcoach, especially on the field, right? Like, oh, things are messed up. Let's not stop practice because the secondary is talking to themselves and they can't figure out the call. No, let them fuck up the call and we'll teach them when we watch it in the meeting room. Mm. They got to learn to fix these things on the fly. Just like, so there's not being a robot was my point.
Otherwise, you can't coach them during the game like that.
What would be crazy is how many times in my career teams go, blow the whistle, stop it. Let's make sure we get all on the same page. No, these are teaching moments, right? So it's not always going to be perfect.
If I always tell you the right answer, you'll never learn why you're wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. And Bill would, that's where I always took away from New England too. Bill made practice hard. Like with John Gruden, the offense was scripted to look good every day. Oh, our quarterback completed 9 out of every 10 passes. And, you know, the offense looked great. And I called plays that were great. And, but yet he also told the defense to be in certain coverages for those plays. That's what they would do. And it used to drive Derek Brooks crazy. He'd go, oh, here we go, scripting for success. We would never play this coverage against this formation. He used to yell the shit like that. And I'd be like, damn, okay, well, yeah, why are we calling this play? But John wanted to work it, whatever. He had his rhymes or his reasons. But the one thing I always took away from New England is, no, we're not here to, like, make everybody feel warm and cozy every day after practice.
Situational football.
Or going through struggles for a certain period of practice. It's going to happen during a quarter of a game.
Yeah.
You know, we played great in the first and second quarter. The third quarter, we laid an egg, and then we had to regather ourselves to come out and play strong in the fourth. And it's crazy how little things like that can go such a long
simple.
Way. I know. I know.
See, I started watching Last Chance U season 3, which it gave me so much anxiety. I got through like 2.5 episodes. It's like if a bag man at a major university conned a university that while he was like the assistant D-line coach, whatever, like he could be the head coach. Right. And it's crazy that, you know, practice, he's just yelling. And that first game, they start to just get like absolutely destroyed. And he's looking, he's just going, figure it out, figure it out. You guys got to figure it out. And you guys, you need to figure it out. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you're the worst coach of all time. But I think about what you're saying and how Belichick works with like situational coaching. His team is prepared for every moment.
Right.
There's nothing they're not prepared for, except for apparently a pass to the quarterback.
Philly. Which is amazing. But no, that's why you even see, like, you've seen Bill in the game, right? He's watching the game, something happens, and he picks up his little notepad and he goes,
yes.
Right? Because, like,
there's never reaction.
Yelling at the players at that point after a week of preparation and letting them know they just, you know, fucked up a 60-yard play.
They already know they did.
They're already beating themselves up. Belichick's not going to go over there and go, hey, idiot, you screwed that one up really bad. I mean, you always know when Bill's a little panicked. The only time I know when Bill's a little panicked is when he starts to go over to the defensive bench and he gets on the whiteboard real quick. Then I go, oh, here's something like truly schematically that he wants to reinforce with the players one more time because he didn't like the way it looked. That's when I know, okay, Bill's a little stressed about something. Other than that, he's trusting his coaching.
I would say this to everybody out there too. Stress is a very interesting way to find out who you're really with. Mm-hmm. So your relationship, your friends, all that stuff. I'm thinking about Belichick and the way he handles stress. I'd love this story. This guy's name is Walt Bettinger. He's a CEO of Charles Schwab.
Okay.
When he takes out a candidate to interview, he believes that the most important thing for any company is personnel. I think you could say that about football too.
Sure.
But when you're the CEO, you're not going to get time to like vet these people and like interview them a lot. So he gets one chance and he does the same thing. He takes them the breakfast and he has the restaurant, which he goes to all the time, purposely mess up their order because he wants to see how they're going to handle it. Are they going to be, you know what? It's fine. I'll just eat it. It's not a big deal. Are they going to, do you know who I'm here with? he looks the way they handle stress, even that little stress.
Yeah.
But think about it. If you're at a restaurant and they messed up your food,
yeah,
it's going to make you feel a certain type of way, especially if you're nervous.
Yeah.
That's the way he tests people.
Right.
And I think that the way NFL coaches or NFL players handle stress, you said this on Dan Patrick last week. I thought it was great. Yeah. When you see Aaron Rodgers or Cam Newton, they're smiling. They're not smiling because it's a different game. They're smiling because they're so prepared,
right,
and they're so much better than everybody else,
right,
that it is easy.
Yeah.
When you look at the linebacker and he's yelling and he's... That guy probably isn't ready.
Yeah, he's stressed.
He's stressed, right, out, and yeah, he's probably not handling it right.
Yeah.
Ray Lewis... You've always said singing and dancing.
Singing and dancing.
Ed Reed, singing and dancing.
They weren't worried about
Larry
the damn
Fitzgerald
thing.
Before,
right,
after the play.
Yeah.
I'm focused.
Yeah.
He's not stressing.
No.
He's not asking
all.
Questions.
Not at all.
Tennessee Titans, playoff game against the Patriots.
Right.
What were they doing between plays? Freaking the fuck out. Remember that?
Yes.
Yelling at each other.
Yes.
I don't know what to do. Tom Brady's going, I got you. Yeah.
Right.
I got you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Look at guys in between snaps, and you'll learn a lot about your own football
You're
team.
Exactly right. You will. You'll know where they are and how secure they are in themselves, their own abilities. But yes, I mean, you said it. I mean, yeah, Aaron Rodgers isn't out there like just giggling for nothing. He's giggling because he's like, damn, this is fun. They're paying me $1 million to go out here and carve somebody up today. And they're going to do it again. And I'm awesome at it. And nobody can catch me. And I can throw this damn ball through any hole in this damn
it's
stadium.
Unreal.
And yeah, that's why they feel like that. You know, Ray, yeah, like you said, Ray dancing over the ball. I'll never forget that. Ball, he's doing his little shimmy with it.
And then
and
all of
that.
A sudden, all the thinking you were supposed to be doing, now you're just listening to it.
No, more I'm looking at my offensive linemen who are going, they're looking at him going, damn, he's not stressed at all, and they're getting more nervous.
Mm.
That's what I remember looking at guys like Kenyatta Walker and John Wade and them going like, they were like, he's crazy, huh? I'm like, yeah, he is. You're screwed.
Protect me. Speaking of the Titans, Cyprian goes down, out for the year.
Yeah.
They signed Kenny Vaccaro. Mm-hmm. Is that an even swap? Does it change the kind of... Because I always thought Cyprian, was he physical?
Physical, yeah.
And I don't really see that with Kenny Vaccaro.
No, Kenny is a little bit of a tweener, like a coverage, certainly not afraid to throw his body around. You know, listen, I think Kenny Vaccaro is a little bit better than the world and the NFL thinks. I think he was put in some very tough positions in that Saints defense,
yeah,
that I don't think were realistic to ask him to do what he did.
Yeah, Gruden kind of eviscerated him one time during a Monday football
yes,
game.
Yes, right, because Sean Payton's his buddy, so he was going to do that for Sean.
No.
But the other thing, too, that's interesting about that whole conversation is Eric Reed's better than Kenny Vaccaro.
Did you hear that apparently the flight was messed up and that's why they just signed Kenny Vaccaro?
Well, he was up here, you know that, which he was here in Jersey.
Eric Reed?
Yes, and we did have a lot of thunderstorms this weekend. So when I first saw that, I was like, what do you mean? Are they saying he canceled out of the flights? Or were they, and it sounds like it was weather cancellations.
Right.
And we did. We had some serious thunderstorms here.
We did.
So maybe that's what really happened. Either way, I don't think Eric Reed in Tennessee is a good fit. Just because I don't think it's the climate for his social stands that's going to be beneficial to him at the end
of
the day.
If you're going to get a safety hurt, this is the offseason to do it because there's so many out there. Mike Mitchell's still out there.
Yes.
Eric Reed's still out there. And there's a number of other guys that are still out there.
T.J. Ward is still out there.
Like good football players.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, you know, the Titans are a team that I'm high on.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure if it's Byard and Vaccaro back there. It seems like it's a little more free ranging where if it was Reed and Byard,
yeah,
Reed could kind of play inside a little bit more.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it'll be interesting.
It will be. It's not going to make me think a whole lot different of their defense.
Okay.
Sip is just what you heard. You know, I think everybody heard. When I was working for New England, he was coming out of, was he Florida Atlantic or Florida International? I can't remember. It's one of the two. But when I was working in New England, I know our area scouts and John Robinson.
FIU.
Who, FIU. John Robinson, who's the GM there now, loved Cyprian. I mean, loved him. Loved the guy.
Was that the guy that Gronk threw out the club?
Ooh, I don't think so.
No.
I don't know. You're right. I'm not sure. It might have been. But Cyprian's the guy that knocked out Kelsey in the wild card game. He can bring it, remember, right? And you could tell
Sergio
he was loved
Brown.
By his team. Sergio Sorry. Brown, that's right, that's right.
Cyprian's hit on Kelsey was the game changer.
Game changer.
When that happened, mm-hmm, it completely deduced their offense, and then Mariota caught a pass to himself, and it was game on.
Yeah.
Speaking of, we got two contract things going on right now. Aaron Donald is so willing to hold out that man, Lefko's looking like a genius in this one, that a lot of players need to report by Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because if you don't report by Tuesday, then you're a restricted free agent next year instead of UFA,
yes,
whatever that is. But Aaron Donald doesn't care. Aaron Donald says, I'm holding out.
Yeah.
This is going to go forever.
It could go. I mean, in his case, he can do this, right?
Because yeah, he can come the week before.
He doesn't expect to ever be on another team with the Rams. Right now, right. He's going, I'm going to be with the Rams forever. So who cares about my free agent year, right? That's what he's at least hoping. Yeah, and I think
Josh Gordon.
That's a different thing. Yeah. Right. And I was not aware of this rule, which, first of all, the first thing I said was, holy crap, the next CBA, this has to be changed because that's stupid. I mean, are you kidding me? Here we go. They already have a fifth-year option, which is stupid to begin with. And now you're telling me they can't hold out of camp to dispute that fifth-year option when they are far exceeded the money and the value of that fifth-year option? I mean, that's just stupid. It's another, like, you know, the owners got one on the over on the players again. It's just, I can't even believe that. It's so stupid. But yeah, Aaron Donald, stay there all day, man. If they don't make you the highest paid defensive player in football, there's something wrong.
The other one is Earl Thomas, who pretty much said in his statements, look, I took a deal last time to help out the Legion of Boom because I wanted to stay together. And after I watched Richard Sherman tear his Achilles and see them just cut him like that, it's kind of hit me in the face that I need to take care of business. And if you guys only see me for 1 year, then trade me to an organization that sees me for a long time because I still think I have time to play.
Yeah,
Earl ain't going away. I think Earl and Aaron Donald, I think they're both holding out if they don't get a deal.
Yeah.
Khalil Mack, his camp has been so quiet that I don't even know where to put it. But Earl Thomas, I think there's a 0% chance he's playing with the Seahawks next year if they don't get a deal.
I
feel that way about both of those guys.
Aaron Donald and Mack are in different situations because they're still in that first deal. So I still have confidence that's going to get done. Yes, I think they're going to hold strong, but I do think that the organizations themselves are going to go, we see the value in it. That's the issue with Seattle and Earl Thomas. Like, what's the value for Seattle? Tell me.
There is none.
Right. So Seattle.
They're caught in a tough spot because the value is not alienating a fan base.
Yeah, okay.
They've been trying to say, this is not a rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
If every member of the Legion of Boom is gone,
yeah,
you can't argue that anymore. Mm-hmm. It's still Russ. Do you like Russell Wilson?
Yeah, right.
Oh, not as much as the Legion of Boom?
Right.
So they're messing with legacy. They're messing with fanhood. You know, they're on the opposite side.
Yeah.
Where here's a player that's fighting the logo,
yeah,
but he actually means more to them than the logo
yeah,
does.
Yeah, you're right. He's right up there with it. There's no doubt.
Because if you think about it, what did our friend Amir always say, who's a Niners fan, when we went to Seattle training camp? It was like a year or two after they won the Super Bowl. And our friend Amir would walk down and he'd go, look at all these fair weather fans. Look, all the jerseys are still new.
Yeah.
Oh, the tags are still on these jerseys.
He was right, though.
A lot of those fans, and I'm not questioning Seattle fans.
No, yeah.
But the Legion of Boom is what ushered in this new generation.
Yeah, brought it to a new level.
Earl might mean more to a lot of people.
He's certainly one of the most important players in franchise history. I don't think he has anything to stand on here.
Yeah.
That's where I think it's different than the other situations. Earl 2 years ago, broke his leg and talked about retiring. Earl is a smaller type of safety as is anyways. So, and he's making $10 million, which makes him top six in football at the safety position, really top five because Cam Chancellor's not playing.
I think he just wants multiple year security.
Which I get that. But I just think Seattle's at the point right now, but they're not going to do that.
How could Seattle do that? And also, like, during a regular season game, he goes to Dallas and says, come get me.
Exactly right. So yeah. This is where...
They're in a no-win situation.
They are. And I don't want Earl to lose money, so I hope at some point he does get back and just approaches it the right way before he gets on the field. But I just think Seattle's proven that they're not willing. They won't buckle. They've proven it through this. I mean, Cam Chancellor, he held out a few years ago. He didn't get crap.
No, he didn't.
Remember,
not.
He missed two games, and they weren't good on defense, and he came back in week three. So I don't think that this group of Schneider, Carroll, the owner, I don't think they're afraid to do this because I think they know that they have a new game plan in Seattle, and they're moving forward.
They held out for so long, and then they cashed in all those guys, and I think they immediately regretted it because they weren't able to get depth.
Right.
One other thing about Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what reporter it was, but asked 20 coaches at the, I think it was the MMQB, asked 20 coaches at the Combine which offensive schemes they're going to study for 2018. every coach named two teams and only two teams.
So Kyle and the Rams.
Niners and the Rams.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
So no one's looking at like the RPOs,
nope.
No. The Eagles, every team. Niners and Rams.
Yeah, I mean, of course, they're going to be, you know, I would say Sean Payton, I'm sure he was in there a lot, but people, I feel like...
They kind of get it.
They
now.
Know it already a little bit. The interesting thing is about what I find in the NFL more than anything is nobody gets New England's offense. Nobody. They don't get it because there's been very few people. There's not a lot of people in the NFL that run it. They don't understand the rule. They don't even know what they don't know. That's what I find with a lot of my offensive friends around the NFL a lot of times. They're just the New England offense is a little bit of a mystery, and it's a little harder in the knowledge of the offense. That's why I think you've seen Josh McDaniels go to places like Denver and not explode offensively right away, or the St. Louis Rams, because it is such a detailed, intricate offense that you need a year or two of guys to be in it before it can really show its true colors.
Is Deshaun Watson running that?
Yeah, he is at a basic level, though. Like, Billy O'Brien's version of the New England offense is not...
Not the same
as Josh McDaniels, no.
Does Josh McDaniels have a savant underneath him? Does he have a wide receivers coach like Sean McVay was back in the day, or Kyle Shanahan was?
Chad O'Shea was the guy that was rumored to be the offensive coordinator if he left town. He's the wide receiver coach. Yes,
Chad. Is he still there?
He's still there. Chatty O is an amazing coach.
Okay.
Amazing.
Hold on. Yeah, I like to invest in people before they come big.
Right.
Stocks and bonds.
Yeah.
So Chad O'Shea...
Yeah.
Is the next guy.
Chad O'Shea.
What about him?
And Brian Flores on that staff.
And he's the defensive linebackers coach, DC.
They're next in my mind, certainly. Yeah.
But Chad O'Shea, tell me about him.
When did you
know that he was different?
Well, I mean, just because of his daily energy, first of all. It's just the person I want to evaluate first, right? And the person's the same every day with great intensity and daily energy. And then to be able to command a wide receiver room is a tough job. I mean, a lot of times NFL coaches are really picked to coach the wide receiving room because they're better at handling, you know, the interactions with people more than actually teaching the X's and O's because they're it's a diva position.
Right.
It's personalities and they all want the ball. Chatty O'Shea has a great blend of being able to do that, but also being a tough ass. He's an extension of Josh to a degree.
That's awesome.
Yes. I mean, he's been there and knows the way things are supposed to be done.
But
Josh is crazy, man. Josh locks himself in a room. Like, on Monday, when he gets done, like, okay, we're done with the previous day's game, and we've evaluated that, Josh will lock his ass in a room and forget it. Like, you're not going to see Josh for 6 hours, and then all of a sudden he's going to come out, like, hot off the press, and you're going to be like, what? And he's going to be like, I got 100 new plays, and you're going to be like, what?
Wait, so he'll go
and
in,
like,
so this is like the afternoon.
He's like, I got a migraine, too, and I'm like, of course you do.
Does anyone, like, everyone knows that he does it. They just, like, let him do his thing?
Yes.
So he locks himself in a room, and is he looking at the next opponent's team?
Yeah, he's going in all in already on the next opponent, and
so
he's
not a guy that has his plays. He's going to look at the opponent and go, let me find their weakness. Let me lock myself in a room for 6 hours, find their weakness, and come up with, like, 100 new plays just to attack them.
Yeah.
So you could come, he could come leave that room with zero plays from the week before.
Yeah, that definitely could be a whole, like, you're going to have some basic carryovers always in a, like, a basic game plan. But yes, he's going to come out with a whole new plan of attack of formations and personnel sets that he think gives them an advantage.
How uncommon is that?
I think New England goes to a greater extent of doing that than anybody else with the mixing, matching of personnels, formations, and overall changing of schematics on a week to week basis. Nobody's on New England's level when it comes to that.
Would he come out and go, this play is going to be deadly? Like, would he, like, even, like, would it be organized?
He'd come out hot and, like, feeling good.
And when he came out hot, what usually happened the next week?
Man, I felt like we tore people up every week. So it was always good. I mean, it was always good.
Did he ever come out kind of like, I don't know?
The week that always... I will remind me of any, like, insecurity in New England ever was when the 2012 season, we went up to New England to play the Seattle Seahawks, the unveiling of the Legion of Boom. I know I've told that story before.
Yeah, you told
it. But that whole week, that was, like, one of the only times I remember being there where everybody was like, damn, they're good, and damn, we don't really know how this game plan is going to work. Like, it was a different week. But Josh was amazing. And then sometimes he'd be locked in that room, and I might have called, like, the wrong coverage on a certain defense for, like, 20 plays in my breakdown. Chris, come on. I mean, that's how you talk. I mean, look, pull up play 71. Pull it up. you see the way the corner's playing there? That's not cover three. And, you know, I'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, Josh. I'm sorry.
Did you really apologize? Because I only know you as the guy that walks around the office and says whatever the fuck he wants. Yeah. Like, so were you really, like, I know that you were the lowest man on the totem pole.
Yeah, I did not want to let down people like Josh or the offensive staff. First of all, every day was a race to get work done. So if I had to go back and fix 25 things, I'd be like, gosh damn, now I'm going to be here till 11:30 tonight. Damn it.
The people that have been in that office for as long as they have, it's insane to me.
Insane.
Brainwashed. But like when you're winning Super Bowls, it's kind of the point.
It does take the edge away.
All right, let's do a few, big training camps.
Whoa.
Chris Harris Jr. says Cortland Sutton is up there with DeAndre Hopkins and Dez Bryant in terms of getting 50-50 balls.
I could see that. He was amazing. I mean, his quarterback SMU was so bad at SMU, he couldn't.
It may have helped him with 50-50 balls.
He had to do everything he could to get a hand on the ball, but... Yeah, I think this is a guy to watch out for. I really do. This is like, to me, the guy we were talking about, a better version of Kelvin Benjamin coming out. Kelvin Benjamin, I know, is a first rounder, and he was on Florida State, and they won the national championship.
Sure.
But this guy's same size, better route runner, better with the ball in his hand.
And I'm also blown away at every Bronco story is a player on that team going, we think we can win the Super Bowl with Case Keenum. Like, they're blown away by Case Keenum.
Yeah.
I look at that wide receiving core. Demaryius, Emmanuel Sanders, Cortland Sutton, and if you had a quarterback that can hit them, they've always been talented. Mm-hmm. I've just avoided them all the time because it's been Brock Osweiler and...
Yeah.
I mean, Demaryius at one point was a top five receiver
in
this league.
Yes, he was.
J.J. Watt on one of your personal favorites, D.J. Reader. Quote, he's the best nose guard in the league. I don't know if nose guards even make the Pro Bowl anymore just because of how it's set up. But do you think he's up there?
I do.
When they lost Whitney Merciless and J.J. Watt, you said, man, they could still get it done because this D.J. Reader is something special.
He is a beast in the middle. Yeah, he is a true, nose plug, right? I mean, a two-gapper, Vince Wilfork of their defense, but got good athleticism and unbelievable strength at the point of attack. You cannot move him. Another Clemson just powerhouse in the middle of that defense, and they play the true 3-4, so they need a guy like that. He's amazing. He's one of the best there is in the sport right now.
He is truly a guy that fucks the play up.
Yes.
And I am now officially on this Monday show requesting applications for Fuck the Play Up correspondence.
Please help us.
Here's how this is going to work. I need to stress this. You're going to have to do it every week. So if you really want this, don't just be like, I want to be involved in the podcast. You guys know that we find different ways to get people involved in the podcast. This is for people that are really going to watch their team and focus on just their team and their D-line and linebackers and people that F the play up. And we'll explain it a little bit later. But the really genesis is if DJ Reader pushes the center and guard back and the running back has to take a wide turn and someone else gets the tackle, we want to shout out DJ Reader for it. So we're looking for one person for every team. I think the smartest way to do it is let's start a thread on Reddit, F the play up, and then everyone will kind of apply. But I'm asking, don't just do it to be able to do it. We really want people that are going to really invest in it.
Yeah.
Because we want to keep track.
Right.
And at the end of the year, we want to give away an award.
Yeah, we do. It's
because we're tired of someone like DJ Reader getting J.J. Watt to the Pro Bowl because he's taking on double teams and no one ever knows about
right.
it.
Yeah. We're the Players Podcast, and these are the guys that are really, stars
the
in the NFL.
We're really the Fat Players Podcast.
They're
like fatties.
Fat guys need love, too, okay?
Offensive linemen, defensive linemen.
Yeah, well, they're the guys that get no credit for anything anymore. I mean, the game's become all about receivers, DBs, and quarterbacks. Gosh, if you don't have great ones of that, how can you win the game?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You know why? Because it's easier to fit into an Instagram graphic.
Yeah, you're right. But yet the team that won the Super Bowl's got a great offense and defensive line, and deep as hell there.
Oh, man, Eagles. Yeah. What team?
The Eagles.
They won the Super Bowl this year?
The Eagles.
Shit. Don't look over at Dawkins. He can't save you. Last one for, big training camp.
Whoa.
There's a wide receiver in Jacksonville that's catching the attention of the cornerbacks.
It's my man?
DJ Chark.
Yeah, I told you.
AJ Bouye says that man is athletic. He's got a baby face, but he plays like he's 30. Mm-hmm. Him and Jalen Ramsey working against each other every practice, you love that because they're going against the best in the game. If they can do it against Jalen, you get excited. It's not only him. Keelan Cole's taking another big step. That wide receivers room has a lot of competition. I've heard that there's some people going on other podcasts saying that the Jacksonville wide receivers were the reason they really tucked it in and got nervous last year. The Jacksonville wide receiving core is still a top 10 wide receiving core in the NFL.
Yeah.
Oh, they don't have Allen Robinson. Oh, they lose Allen Hurns. Maybe they let those guys go because D.D. Westbrook was a baller last year.
Yeah.
Maybe they let those guys go because Keelan Cole was making big plays every single game.
No doubt about it. Marquise Lee played really well.
I mean,
they paid him $7 million. Jaden Mickens went for an 85-yard touchdown against the Seattle Seahawks.
And it's not because Bortles threw him open.
No, this is where the brilliance of Tom Coughlin, we've talked about it, I know.
Yes.
He's an ex-wide receiver coach. He knows how to find these little diamonds in the rough that, yeah, they might not be valued as these $12 million a year type receivers, but they're going to play like it this year, and you're going to go, damn, who is this guy? You know, Dante Moncrief added to it. DJ Shark, man. I mean, he has a chance to be in the conversation, I think, for one of the best receivers in football. He has that type of talent. He was an A.J. Green-ish type of guy at LSU. Another one where if he had a better quarterback and a little better offense, we would have been going, wow, this guy, I think, is a top 20 pick. But because he didn't, people just look at the bottom line stats, and it goes from there.
So he's a guy that you see with limitless potential.
I really do. I thought he was a phenomenal route runner at 6'3", 195. He ran, 4.32 at the Combine, I believe. I think he was the fastest offensive player at this past year's Combine. And
4.34.
And yeah, he is a punt returner and he can make people miss after the catch and catches 50-50 balls. Like the film to watch him was phenomenal. Like that's where I wanted to go. Like there was I remember we talked about it where I was like, man, there's like 30 snaps where he's wide open for touchdowns and he either has to stop and catch the ball for a 30-yard gain or he doesn't even get to catch the ball at all. If he gets like half of those, we're talking about a guy who like had 1,300 yards receiving and like led college football in receiving. But the quarterback play didn't lend to that.
So he'll be used to this.
He could be.
I have a quote from Blake Bortles that's going to kind of wrap up our show that... I know I don't have to defend your rankings anymore, but I just don't think people listen sometimes. And I had someone the other day tell me, well, Blake Bortles did have that 4,500 yard season. And I was like, the stats after a while are just bullshit.
Well, yeah, you mean the year they were 3-13? Is that the year you're talking about?
Blake Bortles said via First Coast News, I think the positive is that the lows aren't nearly as low as they were. They're still up and down, which is going to be when you play our defense every day. I think the floor has risen. The lows aren't as bad. It is 1, 2, 3 bad plays compared to where there were times last year I would go for a whole day of having a bad practice and not really feeling good about it. I think we'll have a chance. He's the only starting quarterback that is not measured in how good he could be. It's how much bad can he avoid.
I know. He tells you it.
He literally says it.
He's telling people he's not a natural thrower.
There is no starting quarterback that talks like this.
I know. That's why I'm trying to drive home the point. My point with the whole 70th thing is, again, there's almost every quarterback in football, if they were afforded the luxuries that Blake Bortles had of playing on this team and every week is about managing Blake so he doesn't screw, everybody would have his numbers, but better. And the team would be better. So he's been afforded this luxury because he was the third pick of the draft, and they just don't want to end the game on it. But yes, I mean, all the signs, and you're in the weeds like me, you can read between the lines. None of the players ever talk about his physical ability.
I mean, the Jaguars
it's always about he's great in the locker room. He's a good guy. They didn't even have him model the new uniforms.
He wins. He didn't model the new uniforms,
right,
yes.
So
I look at it like this, though. I'm going to take a weird stance.
Yeah.
I think Blake Bortles has a good year. And the reason is...
that they're awesome?
Well, that's one. But two, all the stuff that I'm reading is it's been pounded into his head this offseason.
Yeah.
We're checking it down, pal.
Yeah.
We're going to enjoy the checkdowns. Mm-hmm. You don't need to prove that you're number three. All of this is, I'm going to avoid the bad.
Yeah.
He can be successful if he avoids the bad.
Right.
But we look at it and go, how amazing could you be if you had a quarterback that could embrace the good?
They're not maximizing their team.
They're not.
No, I know.
It's a very
hard way. They're electing to win. They're electing to win a Super Bowl like the 2000 Ravens. They're going to go, we're just going to make it 13-12 and we're going to win.
Yes.
And that's, you might be able to do it. And this team has the talent to do that. But that just takes one bad bounce of the football and you don't get it. And then all of a sudden you go, damn, we were really good. Why did we lose those 5 games this year? Well, because every game was a field goal game and the NFL's crazy.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. It's another year with a lot of pressure on Leonard Fournette to really, get that offense going. Yeah. And it's going to be a lot of pressure on that defense to score points.
Yeah, and Nate Hackett. Poor Nate Hackett.
One last thing. This was a question from an Instagrammer. And after this, Josh Fendrick's interview with Drew Brees. He texted me afterwards, Fendrick, and said, it was more proof as to why I am not doing what you do. I was like, all right, we'll see. I haven't listened to it yet. Woodmaster 5000 says that he is from Tuttle, Oklahoma, which is the hometown of Blake Jarwin. And to all the Sims of Lefko listeners, there were dozens of you that reminded me that Blake Jarwin's not a rookie. Thank you. I've got the message.
I saw that.
But Woodmaster 5000 says that Blake Jarwin, he believes, will have more than 30 catches this season.
Hmm.
If he does, this is his proposal, I want to come on set for the show with a plus one. If he doesn't, I will shave an eyebrow. You are a lot better at this than I am. Is that worth it to you? Do you want to accept this proposal from Woodmaster 5000? He'll shave an eyebrow if Blake Jarwin catches less than 30 balls, but if he catches more, he gets to come on the set with a plus one.
I mean, I think that's it's a risky proposition by him.
What about for us?
I don't know this guy, and I don't know who his plus one is.
That's very true.
It's very scary.
He didn't say...
I mean, I'd like to know who his plus one is, but...
So you're kind of like the Hall of Fame now.
Well, I just want to know who it is. Well, hey, this is our damn show. Sorry. We'll hijack our own show at our own expense.
But do we want to see this guy's... I mean, it's kind of fun. We get to watch Blake Jarwin and get upset if he catches a lot of balls. Are you looking at the depth chart?
Yeah, I am.
They really don't have any receivers right now.
No, he's going to get some play for sure. It'll be close.
Are you okay with 30? Do you want to raise it? I don't know if he'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I know.
Do we want to negotiate with podcast terrorists?
40 could be too unrealistic.
32?
I don't want... Let's
30?
Are we really thinking about having
this
guy
here? I'm letting you decide.
Man, on the spot, just letting me decide. 30 catches.
Or we get a video of him shaving off an eyebrow with a thanks, Blake Jarwin.
Maybe his eyebrows are shaved already. Okay, I think...
Villanueva.
Okay, I think we should do it.
Woodmaster 5000, challenge accepted.
We're doing it. Okay.
All right, everybody, keep your eye on Blake Jarwin this season, because it could mean Woodmaster's...
What was your whole big offseason... thing with him? I don't even remember.
He was the unknown guy that was getting a ton of praise that nobody was being talked about more than Blake Jarwin by Stephen Jones.
Yeah, right.
Stephen Jones, the coach and general manager of the Cowboys. Guys, thank you so much as always.
It's close, that one. Oof.
It is. We are, play the music because we're not involved in the next thing. That's just Josh Fendrick. We are going on the road. Tomorrow we are going to California, and we have big stops for our upcoming show. That's going to be really cool shoots. We're going to be with some Rams, some Chargers, some Niners. It's going to be a blast. And we're also going to do, I think, some 30-minute pods while we're on the road. Just kind of doing like some little recaps. We'll hang out in Fendrick's hotel room and then just like give him wet willies and make him record us.
Woodmaster?
Yes.
If Blake gets hurt, you're shaving an eyebrow.
Yeah, you're still shaving.
There's no excuses. You can't make the club in the tub. Sorry.
So guys, up now, here is, for your listening pleasure, it is also, excuse me, I forgot to tell you guys, an audio exclusive. So you need to go to iTunes and subscribe. Why don't you unsubscribe and then resubscribe to listen to the interview?
Sounds like you're cheating the numbers, Lefko.
Yep, I am. Here is Josh Fendrick with Drew Brees.
Lefko, thank you very much. Now joined by the legend, one of our favorite quarterbacks in the entire NFL, Drew Brees of the New Orleans Saints. Drew, before we talk football, just a question for you. I know you're hosting members of the military today with the USAA at the Salute to Service NFL boot camp. Can you just tell us a little bit about what you got going on today?
Absolutely. So we had a bunch of members of our military come out to our training camp practice today, and then afterward we're putting on a boot camp with them thanks to USAA and obviously the relationship they have with the NFL and the partnership with our Salute to Service that we do each and every year to honor their services and obviously what USAA does for them to create, you know, unique opportunities, unique once-in-a-lifetime kind of authentic opportunities like this boot camp opportunity for us as NFL players to come out and show our appreciation to them as well. So we're actually in the Saints indoor facility right now doing a bunch of combine drills, and they've broken up into teams, and you know, they're accumulating point values as a team, and at the end of this, we're going to have a winner. So we're having a lot of fun. 40-yard dash, you know, doing like the quarterback-receiver gauntlet, doing the shuttle, doing all kinds of fun stuff. So we're having a good time.
So, Drew, one of the things we like to do on Sins and Lefko whenever we have a guest join the show is open it up to the audience to ask some questions. So I got some questions from the fans. I'm going to read them to you, and then we want to hear what you think. So the first question from Adam Lefko, at Adam Lefko on Twitter: how much of a genius is Sean Payton?
Sean's great. You know, Sean is, I think he's one of the best communicators, best teachers, you know, when it comes to you're communicating a message as well. You know, not just I'm talking X's and O's with offensive football, but just in building a team, you know, in building a culture. I think he's done a great job of that here and continues to do that with the guys that we're acquiring. And, you know, obviously just the process by which you go through training camp, and each and every day you just kind of have a different emphasis on what you're trying to accomplish. But, you know, what we're creating here with this team is exciting. And obviously, you know, he being our head coach and him being my head coach now for the last 13 years here in New Orleans, you know, I value that relationship and appreciate the opportunity to play for a coach like that.
Next question from Ed Romaine. A lot of people talk about Tom Brady playing at his age and his fitness, but Sims and Lefko have said on their podcast that they think you're in better shape than Tom. Do you have any fitness tips? And is there a DB9 book coming out anytime soon to give people fitness advice?
Listen, there's no doubt that Tom has done a phenomenal job in taking care of his body. And obviously he has a routine that works really well for him. He continues to play at a very, very high level. You know, I've got my routine. I've got things that I've done throughout my career. I continue to fine-tune that each and every offseason. And, you know, just try to be in tip-top shape and be able to play my very best, you know. And all I can say is that I like my routine. I feel like more and more over the last 5 years, I've really paid more attention to diet and sleep habits and recovery and just those things that maybe as a young player you don't really think of as much. You know, you kind of used to just going out there and making things happen, you know, on your own athletic ability. But it takes a lot more than that, you know, especially as you get older. You know, you've got to really, really, you know, pay even closer attention to a lot of those finer details.
So the next question is from David Whitman at Sin City Soldier. How did you become the best leader and hype man in the NFL? Your pregame huddles are legendary.
Hype man. I don't know if I've ever been called a hype man.
That's your title.
That's my deal, right? You know, it's kind of crazy how that started. You know, it started in 2008, and I was getting outside my comfort zone a little bit. You know, I was never the rah-rah guy. You know, as a quarterback, you always try to be real calm, cool, and collected, especially prior to a game. But I felt like at that time with our team, it was needed. You know, somebody kind of needed to step up and fill that role. And I figured, all right, well, why not me? I'll do it. So, it kind of took on a life of its own after that. You know, each and every year it was like the team would look forward to kind of what was going to be the new chant or, you know, kind of the new hype up deal, you know, pregame. So just kept evolving and kept coming up with new stuff and, you know, would get, you know, talk to leaders on the team, kind of get recommendations and different things. And we, you know, we just do stuff that was unique to our team. You know, they'd apply to our team and would get us ready to play each and every week. So it's fun. You know, I've kind of gotten used to it. But at the end of the day, it's about getting your guys ready to play, getting your guys ready to go win, get your guys ready to go play for one another, and just leave it all on the field.
Justin Curry at Life Changer JC. Next question: when did you know Alvin Kamara was special? Was there a moment when you saw him that you knew he was going to be special?
You know, it's funny because you know we drafted him second round, but we had Mark Ingram and we had Adrian Peterson, right? You know, so Alvin was one of these guys that we thought, okay, you know, he'll get some touches on third down or you know as a. You know, one of these kind of specialty backs kind of coming out of the backfield, split him out, do that kind of stuff with him. And then we quickly realized, I remember he made a run in the second preseason game against the San Diego Chargers. He made a run that we all kind of looked at each other and we were like, whoa, you know, that was pretty special. Like, he kind of hit the hole and just turned on the afterburners and pulled away from everybody. And maybe he's kind of deceivingly fast. And, you know, you just, the more opportunities he got, the more you just began to see things that just became really, you know, apparent, like, man, this guy's got some serious skills. So the more opportunity he got, the more that he made with those opportunities. And man, he had a pretty spectacular rookie season last year. What I love is, I think he's remained very humble. He's got a really good work ethic. I like the way he approaches, you know, practice, and he's extremely intelligent. You know, I feel like the more we give him, the more that he embraces it. So I'm excited to see what he'll be able to do for us this season.
Next question from Chris Sims at CSimsQB on Twitter. And we know this is a tough one to bring up, but we want to ask you now, start of camp, start of the new season. Coming out of the playoffs last year, how long does it take to get over a loss like the one you guys had in the playoffs to the Vikings?
Listen, you get over it pretty quickly because you say, you know what, man, we did everything we had. I mean, it's tough to put ourselves in the circumstances that we did that game. You know, we were down 17-0, and all of a sudden we come back and have a chance to win that game, you know, 24-23, scoring all those points in the second half. But, listen, I guess it wasn't meant to be, you know, and I feel like you learn, sometimes you have to learn hard lessons, and it's what motivates you and strengthens you and brings you together as a team and, you know, maybe poises you to accomplish even greater things in the future. So that's the way I look at it, is let's just put us in a position to accomplish greater things in the future.
Drew, a couple more for you. Ripley, at that guy, Ripley wants to know, which defensive backs have given Drew the most trouble over the years? Any DB has come to mind over the years that have given you the most trouble?
Well, you know, there's certainly guys around the league that, you know, I think throughout my career that have been, you know, elite corners, guys that, you know, I remember my San Diego Charger days, whenever we'd go play the Denver Broncos, you know, it was Champ Bailey, right? You always had to know where Champ Bailey was on the field. And you have those times where you're having, you know, get to play against guys like Darrell Revis, or, you know, nowadays it's you know, Marcus Peters and some of these other guys. So, listen, there's a myriad of good DBs, you know, that are out there. So each and every week, those guys present challenges.
Two more for you, Drew, and then we'll let you go. Jacob at the Jacob Morris wants to know, as someone who left Austin, Texas to go to Purdue, how would you compare the food in Austin to America's heartland, Indiana? And does New Orleans have the best food of any city you've been to?
All right. I like talking cuisine. Well, I tell you what, Austin's unique. You know, Austin's got a lot of culture for a city in Texas. You know, it's certainly we got our Texas pride down there, but I'd say the Tex-Mex food in Austin is pretty strong. And there's some pretty strong barbecue places down there too. You know, you got Salt Lake, you got Franklin Barbecue. You know, you come to New Orleans, man, it's hard to beat that, you know, that Cajun cuisine down here, that Louisiana flavor. There's just so many great places. I mean, literally, you could pick a different restaurant every night and for 10 years straight and not hit the same place twice. It's crazy. So I'm if you ask me, like, hey, what would be like your last meal on this earth? Mine would be chicken fried steak, like country fried steak, mashed potatoes, probably green beans, fried okra, black eyed peas, all smothered in like white cream gravy. I mean, that's just about as good as it gets right there. So
that's a hell of a pick.
Call that Texas. That's Indiana. I had that quite a few times at some place in Indiana as well. So that's just some good old, you know, comfort food there.
So, Drew, last question for you before we let you go. One of the things we talk about on the podcast all the time is that whenever a player this time of year talks about how good his team is going to be this season or how far they're going to go in the playoffs, it's national news no matter what the player says. So our question for you, are the Saints going to win the Super Bowl this year?
Hey, man, we're going to take it one step at a time. You know, I like our team, but we got a lot of work to do. Just creating, you know, trying to approach every day with a great sense of urgency. And you'll see how good we can be. I think we can be pretty good, but we got a lot of work to do.
All right. Once again, Drew Brees, USAA, Salute to Service, NFL Boot Camp. Drew, where can people go to find out more information?
Well, of course, the USAA website, but also Salute to Service, they can go to and see all the great things that the partnership between USAA and the NFL are doing to serve our military and their families. Doing a tremendous job, just like this boot camp that we just held at the Saints facility today. It's great to be able to spend time with all of our military members, and looking forward to a great season and then being a part of that as well.
Awesome, Drew. Thanks very much. Good luck this season.
All right. Thank you.